The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Or can he actually go through a... sorry. I'm getting choked up about this Patriots dynasty being over.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. Josh Briscoe, Beards, heading up until 2 o'clock. We will hear from the coordinators and then whichever players at the podium that comes up later on this hour. We are hanging out at ADA Fundraising, adafundraising.com, the location in Riverside. The 635 and 9 Highway just across from Park Hill South. They have opened up their doors. It's the once-a-year open house yesterday, today, tomorrow, and Saturday that the doors are open, and you can just simply purchase these amazing pieces of memorabilia signed, footballs and helmets and jerseys and bats and baseballs and pictures, all of that here at ADA Fundraising. Typically, you would find these awesome, sort of close to one-of-a-kind pieces at different charity auctions and fundraisers. But one time a year, they open up the doors. You can come in and just simply purchase it and not have to outbid somebody next to you. But there's some awesome, awesome stuff in here that we talked about in the first hour. The really cool, I mean, they've got on the wall right now, like, you know, because it's in the news and, you know, we talked about them a lot this year. Autographed Lynn Dawson jersey. There's an autographed Lynn Dawson choir huddle picture that's framed that you can buy as well, and tons of other stuff. I hadn't even noticed the last 2 years we were here of the replica Lombardi trophy signed by Patrick Mahomes. That's right here, Josh. That's pretty awesome. It does have a lot of lip prints on it because that's just what people do when they see the Lombardi trophy. They kiss it. But it's really, really awesome stuff here. So come on over, down, up, wherever you're located, 635 and 9 Highway across from Park Hill South or adafundraising.com. And also they've got the $20 table. So look through there and see some cool stuff. Dylan, yesterday out here with Stephen St. John, got a Eric Dickerson mini helmet, $20 Eric Dickerson mini helmet there. It's where I got my Henry Josie Mizzou helmet like 3-4 years ago. Mini helmet was on the $20 table. I'm like, what's this one? Oh, cool. I'll go ahead and grab that. All right, 913-912-4810 is the text line. Let's bring in Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, kcsn.substack.com, and KC Laboratory Podcast joining us here on the show. Matt, what's up, man? How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. We got Broncos week coming up, so that's the good news. Just trying to move on from the Bengals game now.
Yeah, it's interesting. It feels the exact opposite of last week. Last week, the Rams game happened, and it was like even post-game. All right, Bengals, let's talk about that. This Bengals game happens, and it's like, yeah, I don't know when I'm going to move on from the Bengals game to talk about any of these next five opponents, even though it's Broncos week, and it's a rival, and even though the Chiefs have dominated game after game after game, and this, Matt, was supposed to be a huge game with Russell Wilson there in Denver, and yet, to me, it's sort of like the conversation is still about the Bengals game and not even turning the page to the Broncos yet.
100%. And I think, so it's not all the Bengals Chiefs, fallout result of this. Like, it's been a lot of the Broncos are a relatively disappointing team. Russell Wilson has been more of a joke this year than he has been like this top tier quarterback competing for the AFC West. So I do think the Broncos' lack of firepower or just being a high quality team is playing a big role. But I do also think the Chiefs are coming off of a game that they really wanted to win. And as fans, we really wanted them to win. So it's getting hard to refocus for what is definitely a letdown spot. And that's hard to say with a divisional opponent. But that's certainly the way this week has been going from just, it seems like, every perspective. And, you know, Andy Reid's got up there. He's tried to steer the conversation towards the Broncos. But it just doesn't seem like it's going to easily turn that page until game day happens.
Yeah, he tried. On to Denver. We're on to the Broncos. We're not, guys, that game's over. I answered these questions on after the game and Monday. Okay, we're talking about the Broncos now. I'm assuming the coordinators will have the same sort of Q&A coming up in less than an hour, like 40, 45 minutes from now. We'll see. But we've asked everybody this week, you know, that we've had on just to get their thoughts and synopsis of it, but just sort of simply, like, do the Bengals have the Chiefs' number? Is this just a matchup issue, Matt, or is it the randomness in the NFL and three games is still a small sample size when it's a total of 9 points in defeat?
I mean, the Bengals, you have to say they kind of have their number. At least the Bengals offense versus the Chiefs defense, right? We can go look at other teams around the NFL, and the Chiefs maybe have a middle-of-the-road defense, but there are avenues of success they have against the Bills. We haven't seen them play the Eagles, but we could, you know, theorize on how they would be able to slow down the Eagles' passing attack and rushing attack, just that whole offense. With the Bengals, what the Chiefs want to do just simply doesn't work. And we've now seen that happen multiple times in a row. It just seems like the Chiefs don't have an answer for the Bengals defense. They don't really have. It wasn't that they weren't trying anything. Steve Spagnuolo tried everything from double-teaming receivers to sending pressure to dropping eight in coverage, and just nothing worked. So as of right now, the way things stand, yeah, I think the Bengals offense definitely has the Chiefs defense number. And while I don't think the Chiefs offense particularly struggled in the game, I thought they were really good, the situational football that the Bengals play with has been better than the Chiefs the last few times these two teams have met. And that keeps showing up. That's how the Bengals keep coming away with one-score wins, is they just have been better at situational football and the crunch time moment. So, yeah, until the Chiefs can get over that stepping stone, I think you have to say the Bengals are their worst matchup in the NFL right now, because we have not really seen them go down that path to beating them like we have for the Bills or just about every other team in the NFL.
Is this the first time in the Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes connection that there's another team that has a psychological advantage over the Chiefs, that where they have probably owned that psychological advantage over every other team in the NFL that they would go up against?
Probably. I think technically speaking, the Chiefs with Mahomes and Andy Reid did fall short to the Patriots, but then the wheels fell off mm-hmm. like the very next year. And I don't know if the Chiefs felt after that one loss, you know, in the AFC Championship game, in overtime, in which, you know, Mahomes didn't get a touch of the ball, I don't know if they felt probably psychologically defeated. And I'm sure you ask them to their faces right now, they would say the Bengals haven't put them there. But it's certainly, you can buy that the Bengals have that mental advantage right now, and like no other team has had against them, because they just simply can't seem to figure it out. Mm-hmm. The Titans might be a close number two. The Titans just seem to make it really hard on the Chiefs, and the Chiefs have beat them. So it's there, but like they do make it very hard on the Chiefs, and the Chiefs seem to know going into that week it's going to suck.
Yeah, I just it's weird. It's interesting because, you know, the Chiefs are 1-2 against those three teams, the Bills, the Bengals. You mentioned the Titans, and the talk before the Bengals game, you know, about Justin Reid before the whole Justin Reid, you know, and Ja'Marr Chase stuff that happened, which, you know, whatever, was about that, you know, when he got to the Chiefs, there were three games that the Chiefs players talked about a lot. It was the Bills, the Titans, and especially the Bengals, like those three games. And they're 1-2 in those three games. And the one win was, you know, Mahomes had to, you know, pull out the victory when it was Malik Willis. Like, they really struggled in that game. That to me is, it's kind of odd, because, you know, those are games where if they're ready for them and revenge or showing that you're better than that team, you go out and play better football. And I didn't think they played terrible football against the Bills. I didn't think they played well against the Titans at all. I thought the Bengals were the better team for most of that game on Sunday. And I felt like it just felt like a little bit of a lifeless effort at times. And that sounds like I'm not giving the Bengals credit, which I am. I think the Bengals were the better team there. But I thought there would be more of an intensity, a tackling, a game tackling, you know, every time a play was made, the Chiefs defense is going crazy. And it kind of felt like that was more of them trying to be businesslike rather than this team is better than us. Let's go prove that we're better than them.
Yeah, I'm with you very much on that point for the Bengals game. So for the Bills, I thought that maybe the Chiefs were not putting forth their best game plan. Maybe there was a little bit of a desire to hold stuff back offensively specifically because they didn't want to showcase the Bills everything they're going to do so early in the year when this game really might not matter that much down the stretch and you might play them again. Like, it seemed like a relatively vanilla offensive game plan. Versus the Bengals, I didn't get that feeling. It felt like the Chiefs were trying to go out there and beat them offensively or defensively with their scheme, and sometimes mm-hmm. it worked, sometimes it didn't, but the players definitely seemed at times to lack that same fire. The players out there did not seem to be getting as fired up as I had anticipated, given all the trash talk that has happened, you know, between the two meetings last season and then leading up to this mm-hmm. game. I thought there would be more energy on the field. I thought it was going to get a lot chippier. The Bengals players got two personal fouls for, you know, talking a little extra smack, and maybe the Chiefs were going out of their way to make sure they avoided those. I don't know. but I do think that they looked like they were playing a little flat with their energy relatively early on in the game, and that really caught me by surprise given just the way everything was going.
Visiting with Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. So I want to get into your piece that you wrote on Trent McDuffie, because I thought it was really interesting and certainly a positive to take away from that Bengals matchup. But, you know, I was talking in the first hour just looking at Chiefs against playoff opponents, you know, in the time that Mahomes and, you know, has been the starting quarterback for the Chiefs, so going back to 2018. Their overall record of those games in which they played teams that made the playoffs that year. So not like, well, the Raiders made the playoffs last year. Well, the Raiders aren't in the playoffs this year. So just against teams that made the playoffs that year. The Chiefs' record with Patrick Mahomes is 17-11. It's 19-11 if I add one game out from the playoffs this specific year and include the Chargers, who they're 2-0 against. But then I don't even want to skew it. So I'm just saying teams that are in the playoffs, it's 17-11. In the last 3 years, 20, 21, and 22, the Bills are only 10-9. But, Matt, this is what really jumped off the screen to me, was that in the last 2 years with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, the Bengals in the regular season and playoffs are 9-1 against AFC teams that made the playoffs that year. They are 9-1. It stops being, you know, just, oh, you made a play here, randomness, small sample size. Because the Chiefs in 2019 and 20, Matt, they were 8-2 in those 2 years. I mean, they dominated. They won those games because it felt like they almost, it was the inevitability of Patrick Mahomes, that it was inevitable that the Chiefs were going to find a way to win. You just knew it was going to happen until the Bucs game, and then everything came crashing down. But the Bengals 9-1 is just really fascinating to me, because they've just found ways to win, and they're 2-0 last year and 1-0 this year. Against the Chiefs because they found ways to win. Is that something where you say it starts to even out, that, you know, the Chiefs 8-2 starts to even out and they're 17-11, 9-1 right now for the Bengals? They can't possibly be that good against playoff teams, you know, game in and game out. What do you make of that? Because it's 10 games in the last 2 years, and they've only lost one of them.
I think it certainly evens out over time. The Bengals won the AFC last year, so from the Chiefs' perspective or an individual team, it's 100% like they're the team to beat. But I think if you look around the NFL and you ask a random opponent which team they cared more about facing, it would come back to Chiefs still. I think a lot of other teams still see the Chiefs as the team to beat. That's where they're going to put, you know, their best foot forward is going to be the Chiefs over the Bengals. So I think that probably plays a small role, is that the degree at which teams prepare or the pedigree that they hold the Chiefs to right now is probably still as high as anybody in the NFL. The Bengals are still trying to work their way to be in that spot, even though they come off of, you know, going to the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they were getting that same level of respect coming into this year as the Chiefs did. That's probably problem number one, is teams just try really hard. It sounds silly, but teams are trying really hard to beat the Chiefs. Coaches are breaking all their tendencies to beat the Chiefs. They really want to do it because they know that's the cream of the crop. And secondary, the Bengals have been so good situationally. That team is very well coached. Their situational football has been through the roof. Now, there's a reason they're winning a lot of close games. There's a reason when it's a big premier matchup, like you're saying here, 9-1, they're really good in those spots. All last playoffs, you could make a case that they should have, could have, probably should have and could have lost every single game they had in the playoffs, but they didn't until the Super Bowl. There's a reason for that. They are really good at their situational football stuff, and you saw it again versus the Chiefs this past weekend. So they're doing a good job winning those games. I think they're probably, if they go back to the AFC Championship game or the Super Bowl or whatever it is this year, I do think next year you start to see that even out. It'll be 2 years of this offense. Teams will have time to plan for it. They'll get more tape, but they'll also start being like, okay, the Bengals are one of our main threats this year, whereas right now I think it was seen as the Bills and the Chiefs coming into the season, not the Bills, Chiefs, and Bengals like it maybe should have been.
Yeah, their one loss in the last 2 years was against the Ravens earlier this year. This year they've beaten the Chiefs, Dolphins, Jets, and Titans, who are in the playoffs right now, so that's the four this year. Last year, 2-0 against the Chiefs, and then they beat the Titans, Raiders, and Steelers. Now, they were 2-0 going into the playoffs last year. They went 3-0 in the playoffs, so there's their 5-0 record last year. So, you know, winning those playoff games helps, you know, just as when the Chiefs were 8-2 in 2019 and 20, they didn't lose a playoff game. So those were all wins that count. I do wonder, too, because we see them the last 2 years. Right now, they would currently sit 6-6 in those games against teams that made the playoffs that year. Is it a margin of error thing to where the Chiefs' margin for error in 2019 and 20, they were the best team? So even some closer games, it's like, yeah, but they were the better team. And so the cream ultimately rises to the top. And now if we see the Chiefs, you know, losing some of these close games, they have the turnover on the first drive against the Bills and then the turnover on the last drive against the Bills. And they lose by 4 points. They can't get a stop. And, you know, when they're up by three and the Bills score a touchdown against the Bengals, you know, Travis Kelce fumbles the football and, you know, there's the third and three looked like they schemed a couple of players wide open, but a defensive player, you know, breaks through and makes a play. And last year they were dominating until a play here or there. Is it a margin of error thing to where we're seeing like, yeah, this is what happens in the NFL when you're a good team and there are other good teams and you don't have a decided advantage across the board from 1 through 53, and your team just has to make more plays in that game to find a way to win, and some of these games in the playoffs are going to be 50-50 coin flips, and you know, you just hope at the end of the day the ball bounces your way sometimes.
That certainly plays a role. The margin for error that the Chiefs have has decreased over the past couple seasons, and I mean, there's multiple reasons for teams getting their moment to where they know they can spend money to try to make a run. The Chiefs have, you know, shifted money because it has to go pay Patrick Mahomes to be here. He's no longer riding out on the rookie contract. He's not, you know, completely handicapping the team, and not that it won't ever be worth it, but they're not paying an insane amount of money yet for him. But you look at the Bills, you look at the Bengals, these are teams that still have their quarterback costing a lot less money than Patrick Mahomes. That allows them to build a stronger team elsewhere, spend that money around them. And so I think a big thing you're seeing right now in the NFL, it's long been said, you know, the most valuable thing in football is a quarterback on a rookie contract. But I think you're also starting to see now is some of these rookie quarterbacks are getting good so early. They're not needing time, you know, till their final year of that rookie deal, their fifth year in the league to be good. It's happening quickly. So now they have 2-3 year stretch where they're still cheap comparatively for the team, and they can build big, strong teams around them. The Chiefs are trying to reset their roster to account for Mahomes, you know, cap percentage that he's taking up. The Bills are about to join in a year or two. The Bengals a couple years after that. Mm-hmm. And it just essentially means, yeah, more guys have to make plays. Somebody besides Mahomes has to go out there and make some plays. And against the Bengals and against the Bills, really, the Chiefs' defense, nobody on the defensive side of the ball was making any plays in those two games for him.
Matt Lane is our guest. You talked about situational football for the Bengals and other teams and maybe lack thereof for the Chiefs at times. How much is that Andy Reid? So if we say situational football, where does the coach, head coach come in decisions that are made or points in a game where maybe you've got to view something different than the way that Andy Reid has traditionally viewed things? So situational football and Bengals coming through, the Chiefs not. How much is that on the head coach?
It's certainly a fair amount of it is. I mean, the head coach, the coordinators can make the right call, and players still have to execute in the situation, right? So there is going to be times where it's not just on the coach. It will be the lack of execution. You know, Chiefs 3rd and 3 play that ends up leading to the missed field goal. I don't think there was anything wrong with the Chiefs' decision there. It was just the execution was not well pulled out by the players. So execution's still going to matter. That said, I think Andy Reid is a little too passive of a coach for some of the defenses that are in the AFC or offenses that are in the AFC right now. There should have been no chance that he was considering giving the ball back to the Bengals if he could help it in that game. Same thing with the Bills. Now, I know they didn't choose to give the ball back, but if he's in a situation to run the clock out and try to score a game-winning score as time expires, whether that means you got to go for it on a 4th and 7 or something like that, I think he has to recognize that the offenses in the AFC with this quarterback play are going to be really hard to stop when you have an average defense, and especially on a day where they're not playing their best. He's got to be a little bit more aggressive, I think, in that situation. I doubt that the Bengals were going to attempt a field goal there. I highly doubt if the roles were reversed that they would be trying to kick a field goal and give the ball back to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense in a tie game with 3 minutes left. That's what Andy Reid was essentially trying to do. I think he kind of misread that situation a little bit, and that has been something he has done throughout his career. He's a little bit more of a passive coach in those kind of situations.
Yeah, how often have the Chiefs been there? I mean, Tom Brady, and now we have to throw in Josh Allen and certainly Joe Burrow. I mean, absolutely. How often have the Chiefs sat there and said, we have to make the decisions on our team to win because we don't want that guy getting the ball? Tom Brady was always that, right? And I've referenced it a couple of times that after the game was over, Joe Burrow was specifically asked by a reporter on 3rd and 11, why didn't you play it more conservative? Why go for a pass that was that tight of a window on 3rd and 11? If it's incomplete, now they get an extra timeout. Why not just hand it off and be more conservative? And Joe Burrow's answer was, do you know who the quarterback on the other sideline is? If we kick a field goal, yeah, he goes down and scores a touchdown and they win. I don't think Andy Reid ever approaches it like that, except maybe, when it was Tom Brady. But I don't think he approaches it like that with Josh Allen or Joe Burrow, where other teams are approaching it like that and have been doing that with Patrick Mahomes, that, no, we got to win this now, because if that guy gets the ball, they're going to go and win. And you mentioned the Bills, and that's a good point, but the Bills were only down 3. So, they scored a touchdown to go up 4. If you're down 3 and you score a touchdown, I don't care how much time's left on the clock at that point. I'm up 4. So if I kick a field goal here, all he's got to do is go and kick a field goal. Okay, great. I've got to give the ball back to Mahomes with 1:45. Yeah, but I gave him the ball back when we're up 4 instead of tied. So that's a little bit different scenario since they went down and scored. But that sort of thought process and mindset, we've talked about that all the time, Matt, with other teams, that they don't want to give the ball back to Mahomes. It's about time the Chiefs start doing that with some of these teams like a Joe Burrow or a Josh Allen, that we do things on our sideline because we don't want that guy getting the ball back.
Yeah, and I'm biased. I still think Patrick Mahomes is the best player in the NFL, so I fully believe that. However, the gap from him to the next quarterback, even in the AFC or just in the NFL, or the gap from the Chiefs offense to the Bills or the Bengals, is so much smaller than it was just a couple years ago, that, yeah, there has to be some fear, I would assume, or like I would like mm-hmm. to think, in giving the ball back to some of those other offenses. And especially in that game, I'm okay if you somehow get yourself in a defensive struggle with one of these two teams and the score is 17-17 or something like that, and you want to trust your defense with that much time left after they've been getting stop after stop all day. That's an entirely different situation than essentially you only stopped the Bengals one time from getting into field goal range in the entire game, and now you're banking on, all of a sudden that happening again. That seems like misplaced trust in the defense, and you can't mm-hmm. not trust your defense at all. But is a single player on the Chiefs team going to be upset if Andy Reid decided to trust Patrick Mahomes to pick up 7 yards? I don't think so. I don't think anybody on that defense is going to blink twice about making that decision. So I do think that trust, that belief in the defense to get essentially their second true stop of the game in that moment, which didn't even happen because they missed the field goal, but like the trust there, that belief was misplaced. And I think he needs to be a little bit more aggressive in these kind of situations, like other teams are doing to the Chiefs going forward.
But it proved to be foolish even the way it played out, because the Bengals could play it more conservatively and they still couldn't stop them. Now imagine if the Bengals had to be more aggressive to go and score and kick a field goal. Are they going to stop them then? Like, if there was a time where you were going to go out and stop them, it would be to where you're down 3 and they're just going to run the clock out. All we got to do is run the clock out. We're going to stop the clock and we're going to stop them. And they didn't even do it then. So that's also just as frustrating, is that the evidence before and after did not support that particular decision. Matt Lane is our guest. You wrote about Trent McDuffie, and so I'm glad you did, because there's a lot of negatives coming from the game. But what did you see from specifically number 21 out there on the field for the Chiefs?
He's good. He's really, really good at football.
There we go.
And I think that's about the end of it, right? No.
All right, well, thanks, Matt. We appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
This is what I'm here for. You're watching the game, and I guess it's a stark difference compared to last year, where both games where the Bengals were essentially just slinging the ball up the sidelines, producing all these big plays. They didn't do that at all in this game, and the only couple times they really tried it, there was two of them against Trent McDuffie, and this is what we all wanted to see. Can this 5'11", shorter-armed cornerback defend Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, two of the better jump-ball wide receivers in the NFL, going vertically? Because this is something that beat the Chiefs. And guess what? They went 0-for-2, trying him vertically like that down the sideline, and the way he played it was perfect. He played a couple different techniques, but he essentially just said, I can't jump up there. I can't compete, 7 feet in the air with you guys. You guys are bigger, taller. I'm just going to take away all the space you have on the ground and make you land out of bounds. And it worked great twice. And then you couple that with just all of his technical proficiency at the position, he was phenomenal against two of the better receivers in the NFL. And, like, I really wanted to make sure I touched on it this week because I think a lot of people, Chiefs fans, are going to have a bad taste in their mouth about the way that game went down. But there's definitely some silver linings there. I think it has to start with Trent McDuffie, who I don't think you're going to find a cornerback who's going to play much better against those two receivers for an entire, you know, all year long.
Yeah, no, I would say people go and check that out because you've got the plays there and showing and slowing down where he's, you know, working Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, and that space on the sideline is just evaporating because of the technique and how Trent McDuffie is playing that, to where both of those plays are guys jumping up to go and make a play and they land out of bounds because of that. Another cornerback that's not, you know, attacking it or approaching it that way, they might be 2 for 2 on jump balls because the cornerback might think, well, you know, he just jumped over me and he got me. Yeah, but you also did not eliminate the space between the sideline and that receiver, and that's what McDuffie did. So cool, go make the catch. That's great. You're not going to make the catch because you're going to land out of bounds. I thought it was a really good point and really good for you to sort of emphasize that.
Right. It is, and I love how he seems to just understand that that starts at the snap, at the line of scrimmage. It doesn't matter where that, you know, potential catch is happening, 20 yards downfield, 30. He understands that he's got to start taking space away right at the line of scrimmage. So it starts with, you know, how he's playing. How patient is he? How physically is he going to be? What's the wide receiver split, and like when can he start taking away that space? So there's a lot of good that he did in the entire game that I kind of go through with, you know, go to kcsn.substack.com. But those two plays in particular, they're so different because one of them, he's on the back hip of Jamar Chase. He's trying to watch the ball. He recognizes that it's going over his head. There's no way he's going to be able to make a play. So rather than play the receiver, he just continues to back box him out essentially and force him out of bounds. And then the next time, T. Higgins kind of has him in a little bit better spot to attempt to make the catch. So instead of even looking for the ball or trying to play the ball at all, he just straight up runs through the chest of Higgins as he's trying to make the contact, and that forces him out of bounds. It's just that game awareness, the ability to recognize where he is on the field, what the receiver has to do, and it starts at the line of scrimmage. It goes to the catch point. You couldn't have been more impressed with what he did. And I do like how the Chiefs played those receivers too, adding some extra double-team stuff over the middle of the field, allowing the cornerbacks to play aggressively up the sideline. It was a good game plan to handle Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. They just couldn't execute against the rest of the stuff that the Bengals were throwing at them throughout the whole game.
Yeah, it makes sense why Samaje Perine became such a big part of that game, is because of the game plan you talk about maybe in the back end taking some of those things away. Matt Lane, KC Sports Network. Real quick, a score in mind for Chiefs and Broncos?
Oh, man. See, look, we just now started talking about this, and we're almost 30 minutes in. That's what this game is, right? I think it's going to start really slow for the Chiefs. I think they're going to be sluggish. I don't know if it's necessarily like a hangover type game. It's just, I wonder how much they really have turned the page. It might take them till halftime to really start getting amped up. I mean, I do think they'll win because they're just a more talented team, but I don't think it'll look pretty. I don't think Chiefs fans are going to feel great after this one. You've got to be happy with the win. So I'm going to say 21-16 or something. It's just going to be a pretty gross game for at least the first half, if not the first three quarters.
It'll make for an interesting discussion on Monday if they beat the Broncos 21-16. We'll see. Matt Lane, you're the man. Really appreciate the time, sir. Thank you so much. Enjoy the football. We'll talk soon, man.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Absolutely. You too. There's Matt Lane, kcsn.substack.com, KC Laboratory Podcast. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We continue hanging out at ADA Fundraising, ADA Sports Memorabilia, adafundraising.com. Our location today, 635 and 9 Highway across from Park Hill South. We'll tell you more about what's going on here. The open house, the once a year open house for ADA's fundraising, all these awesome pieces of sports memorabilia here today, tomorrow, and Saturday. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
So check your bags. Make sure you've declared your sausage. That's my lesson of the week.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, hanging out at the ADA Fundraising, adafundraising.com. It is 635 and 9 Highway, just across from Park Hill South is the location today. The once-a-year open house that they open up their doors to the public to come in here and check out all of the great stuff that they have that they are selling to you. Typically, you will only be able to get this at fundraisers and charity auctions and things like that. Here, you can walk in and see all of these signed footballs and Arrowhead seat backs and signed pictures and frames and jerseys. And there's, you know, baseball bats over on the wall, a Bobby Witt Jr. signed bat. They got baseballs and all of that stuff and mini helmets and a replica of the Lombardi Trophy with Patrick Mahomes' autograph on it. So many cool stuff, conversation pieces. And man cave centerpieces that are here. And if you've got somebody on the list for Christmas, the holidays, a gift, birthday, maybe yourself, this is the spot to come down and check it out because you don't know what you're going to leave with. Okay. I said at the beginning of the show, I didn't know last year I was going to leave with an Alex Gordon autographed batting glove inframed with his picture rounding first base and all. I didn't know that was going to be something that was going to be hanging on my wall when I showed up. I didn't walk around saying, I'm coming up, you know, snake eyes trying to find this Alex Gordon signed batting glove and walked in like it was, you know, the tree in Christmas Vacation when they finally found it. That's not what happened. I saw it and I'm like, oh, that is what I'm leaving with.
It really is remarkable, like, just sort of looking around. I'm a sucker for the seat backs. I've always thought those are really cool. I don't know, maybe just it's such a connective piece to Arrowhead. But you turn any corner here, you're going to see something. We go, well, I didn't know that I did need that, but that's the coolest thing I've ever seen, so I guess I might as well grab it. And as you've already talked about several times throughout the show today, like you said, this is not something you have to outbid anybody else for. It's like all really fairly priced and an incredible spot to grab some gifts. Like you said, something for yourself. I imagine I'm going to try to hit several birds with that one stone today. I got a question for you, though.
Okay.
Looking over there, you see there are a lot of the, you know, regular Chiefs helmets, just, you know, as is the iconic ones. Then there are lots of different versions of them.
Yep.
And typically, a lot of them are very, very cool to display. I don't know that all of them would, you know, work on the field. You see the big one over there with the giant blown-up Arrowhead that's like a white-to-red gradient on the far right, the Kelsey one
On the far right, yeah.
Yeah, it's very, like, college football, very kind of wacky. But if you just took the KC there... You took it out of the Arrowhead. Like, I think alternate helmet. The NFL's got alternate helmet rules allowed again. Big KC without the Arrowhead outline. Maybe it is just in black. Maybe it's the red KC, black outline, on a white helmet. That might be the first sort of idea starter for me that has gotten me onto the chief secondary helmet idea. I also do like the white ones with the red Arrowhead. Those are
matte,
pretty clean.
The matte white.
I'm a sucker for a Stormtrooper look.
Yeah, no, those are cool. I am, when it comes to the jerseys and uniform combination with the Chiefs, I am very traditional.
I get it. They've earned that.
I am not in favor of any alternate jerseys or anything. Bengals can do all the different stuff that they want helmets, and
sure,
that's cool. But I am good with just keeping it as is. Now, collectibles and things like that, if I do like the white, you know,
the white one might
matte
be my favorite.
Helmet
the matte
is
white one,
is
yeah.
pretty cool. But you know, if it's for the Chiefs on the field, traditional red tops, white pants, or, you know, white on white, anything but red on red, red tops, red pants. I am very traditional when it comes to the Chiefs. Other teams can do it. Cool. I'll check them out. But college, I get it all. You know,
totally.
There are two jersey combinations for teams that I root for that I would want them to just launch into the sun. It's the red on red for the Chiefs, and it's the Bumblebees for Mizzou. Launch the Bumblebee uniform combination for Mizzou into the sun and take the red on red with you.
I am 98% with you. I am very tempted by, now that I've said it all, the white helmet, maybe the matte white, over the white on white. I'd like to see what that looks like if they are going to push that direction.
All white Stormtrooper?
Yeah, full. I don't like red on red. I don't want the color rush. But the all white might not be terrible. All of these would look incredible on your mantle in your man cave under the Christmas tree.
I will say my favorite Northwest Missouri State uniform combination was the white on white on white. The white Northwest helmet, the white jerseys, the white pants, the Stormtrooper look. It's slick.
Really,
I don't know. Maybe just look faster.
That might be it.
I don't know.
Maybe I'll start wearing all white. Yeah. Tight-fitting, just some white skinny jeans.
And the best thing, it's very slimming.
It really is. White. I'm sure I'll look fast
very,
and slim.
Very slimming. It hides any features of your body. That's the best part about wearing white. We'll take a timeout. We will come back. We are hanging out at ADA Fundraising. We'll hear from the Chiefs. Dave Tobe, Steve Spagnuolo, Eric Bieniemy. And then I haven't seen if we have an update on a player yet. Not yet. But we'll tell you who's going to be at the podium coming up on the other side of the break. More Zone on this Thursday right after this.